Hello again. Welcome back to the program, Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Brian Shields, and for Ray Graff, comic book and pop culture fans, it's the moment you've been waiting for. Today, we welcome two of the biggest geeks in the region to talk comics and geekery. And with all the announcements made at San Diego Comic-Con this weekend, there's a lot to talk about. First, we have Ron Mars. That guy killed off Green Lantern Hal Jordan. Boo. Ron has written major storylines for nearly every Top Comics publisher, from Marvel and DC to Top Cow and Dark Horse, Silver Surfer, Green Lantern, Witchblade, Star Wars, Conan. He's the man behind some of the epic storylines. Also here, pop culture journalist Rick Marshall. Rick is the former editor of MTV News' Splash Page blog and has been dubbed a professional geek by the likes of ABC, CBS, CNN, Spike TV, and more. He's an industry expert, providing news, reviews, and columns for movies.com, digital trends, and more. He also hosts our podcast here at WAMC, Retconned. Rick and Ron, welcome to Vox Pop. Everybody else, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also post comments below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. And you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, 800-348-2551. Ron, before we get to Comic-Con, that's got to be a big discussion before you kill somebody off, isn't it?
Yeah, but everybody gets better in comics eventually. So, but that, you know, that particular job was, you know, that kind of stuff gets decided editorially.
Yeah.
And I got a call kind of late one night. I had actually been down at Marvel's offices, and I got home, and DC called and said, "Hey, we'd like you to take over Green Lantern." And I thought, "Oh, that's cool. I love Hal Jordan's cool. I love that costume. It's a classic character." And they said, "Hang on a minute. The other shoe's going to drop." So they told me what they wanted to do, and I had to think about it for a week or two before I signed on. And obviously, I'm glad I did. It was a kind of a watershed storyline. So I take the slings and arrows that go with it, and I take the compliments for what came after. My name's on the book, so you stand up.
Can you worked for Marvel and DC at the same time? Can you do that?
It's pretty rare these days.
Yeah.
Back in the 90s when I did it, it was not common, but you could do it. I think it was at that point I was actually working on monthly books for Marvel, DC, and Image at the same time, which you would not be allowed to do at this point because Marvel and DC are very territorial and most everybody's signed to an exclusive contract. If they give you the good toys to play with, they want to make sure you're going to stick around.
Rick, does that kind of thing really get the fans going, whether it's a comic book or you kill off Spock or you kill off a major character and some people just don't like it or love it?
At this point, pretty much any change in any long-established character is a pretty big deal. We have that happening a lot now as a lot of the publishers are trying to sort of drum up interest, kind of bring attention to themselves by changing certain long-established characters, whether it be Captain America or Iron Man or any of them there. But yeah, it always generates a lot of discussion, both good and bad. And I guess that's part of the thing, you know. Part of comics' appeal is being able to sit and read and then also talk about them with other people reading comics.
Let me allow the cynical reporter to come out. Do they do that to boost sales? They kill somebody off just to get some interest and maybe...
What a shocking accusation.
I'm shocked.
Ron could probably speak better than that, but isn't allowed to. but yeah, that's definitely a big part of things. But right now, also, the big issue and the big sort of balancing act that a lot of publishers are doing is now that we have comics... having such a larger presence in the movie world and TV world and such, you also have to reconcile what's going on in the comic books themselves with what may be happening on the screen and how different do you want the two, you know, two iterations of the character to be, whether it be just simply the timelines that you're talking about, the events happening then, whether you want to directly link them to it. So it's a big balancing act right now for a lot of publishers, but you know, comics are doing well and the movies are doing particularly well, and symbiotic relationship is hopefully going to keep things going.
800-348-2551, the number to call, 800-348-2551. Ron Mars and Rick Marshall here. Comics and general geekery. Your calls are welcome at 800-348-2551. Ron, you just are back from San Diego Comic-Con, for the uninitiated, what is that?
It is...
it's huge now.
From my point of view, it's an ordeal to be survived.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the biggest pop culture show in this country, certainly. Certainly in you know, square footage and overall attendance. I think it still outstrips New York Comic-Con. But it's the mecca for all of this stuff, and it certainly started out as a Comic-Con. It started out in a hotel ballroom back in the 70s and has steadily grown since then and really kind of went into overdrive once Hollywood discovered that there was this accessible audience, you know, 2.5 miles south on the freeway that they could basically promote to for 4 days. So now it's a much bigger movie and TV and toy and video game convention, and comics are still a part of it, but it's comics are one dish on the smorgasbord. It's not just the only thing anymore.
And if you think about it, they're all massive industries, by themselves. Hollywood, you know, the movies, TV, video games too. All these things are massive industries on their own, and with San Diego Comic-Con, they're all sort of smashed together into one building. The biggest releases from all of these industries are all being announced, previewed, shown off, all in one place, and it's totally fan accessible. So you buy tickets, you go to it, you get to see the stars of this movie that's going to make $1 billion, you know, get 15 feet away from them, and you're going to see these video games before anybody else gets to see them. You're going to see previews of TV series long before the new season is even going to come out. So it's become massive. I joke with people a lot of time that it's kind of like, you know, recently RNC and DNC kind of put together on the same weekend. Like if you had all of these sort of conventions on the same exact weekend. And from a journalist side, it's crazy to cover because you have all of these things happening. Hollywood is competing with, movies are competing with television, which is competing with video games, which is competing with comic books, all to have the announcements take center stage.
800-348-2551, the number to call, 800-348-2551. Comments below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Tweet your questions and comments, WAMC Vox Pop, or email us, voxpop@WAMC.org. Or if you prefer the telephone, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. From Twitter: favorite treatment of current issues through the years in comics and your thoughts on the retcon craze. Justin, I'm not quite sure what that means, but I'll pass it over to you. I think maybe they're talking code to you guys.
Well, what's happening when he says the retcon craze, that's actually where we got the name of the podcast that we do here. Retcon is basically where you go back and you sort of retroactively change the continuity, the history of a character. You go back and change maybe if a superhero had a kid at some point earlier in their, you know, sort of comic book run, but it's not really convenient to have that character have a child now. You go back and you kind of do something to make sure that that's not really the case now for the current incarnation of the superhero, and you sort of change things retroactively. You know, it works sometimes, other times it doesn't, but the beauty of comics is, you know, as Ron can tell you, being the one who writes them, is that you can always change things, and when you have a hit, it sort of erases all the any of the misses that you had prior.
Yeah, comics are, you know, comics are essentially static stories. You know, Batman's been 35 for 75 years. So a certain amount of retconning is absolutely necessary because you want the things to stay contemporary. And if the characters have been around for, you know, for Marvel and DC characters, 40, 50, 60, 70 years, that's just a natural progression that, okay, you know, the guys from the Fantastic Four didn't fight in World War II. They fought in Vietnam. No, I mean they fought in Iraq. No, I mean they fought in Afghanistan. Yeah. So it's a continuation of you know, the mythology. You just have to update it. And ultimately, comics are about the illusion of change. You know, the characters essentially stay who they are. The details might change, but Superman is always going to be the last son of Krypton. Batman's always going to be you know, a millionaire who lost his parents as a child and has to you know, has to seek vengeance upon criminals. The core of the characters change. The details around them change. And I think a lot of ways, what especially the Marvel movies have done well, is to sort of capture the core of the characters and then work the details however they're going to best translate to film. I think that's why the Marvel movies have been successful, that they stay very true to who those characters are when they were created 50 years ago.
800-348-2551. 800-348-2551 is the number to call. We're talking comics and geekery today with Rick Marshall and Ron Mars. 800-348-2551. Let's talk to Chris in Bennington. Chris.
Hello. Hi, good afternoon.
Hi. Go right ahead.
I wanted to start just by saying how great Ron Mars's Green Lantern comics were. That his Kyle Rayner storylines is what got me hooked on that character back in the 90s, and it was just tremendous. And I know he caught a lot of flack, particularly. I remember huge anger online with Heat, the Hal's Emerald Attack Team, which I think probably even made threats against Ron Mars himself. But just it was great work, and he should be lauded for that, for sure.
Well, thanks, Chris. I appreciate it. I swear I did not pay him to say that.
The question that I have to ask, it kind of piggybacks on the retcon question you were just speaking to, and that it strikes me as a bad call when comic companies completely reboot entire franchises. So, you know, the whether we see it with DC, whether we see it with Marvel, not just changing the continuity, but starting with, you know, brand new issues one or sometimes issue zero. I remember when I first started reading comics in the mid-80s, the thing that was so appealing about them was that I was tapping into this new universe and this new this continuity that had been going on for decades. And it seems to me that comic professionals, or comic companies rather, are missing the mark when they think that new readers would not be turned on by that, and the whole notion of giving people a good jumping on point and starting from square one, whereas my own experience was that that was not the appeal. I'm just wondering if you can speak to that and your thoughts upon that with regard to the current industry.
Well, it can be kind of daunting to jump into comics that have been going on for hundreds and hundreds of issues, you know, and so I understand why the industry does it and why publishers do it, and especially right now with movies drawing a lot of attention to characters that may have been long established for, you know, comics readers, but not so much in the public eye. But yeah, it's been sort of a mixed bag right now with reboots. We have some of the major publishers doing massive reboots, starting over entirely, and then maybe a few years later, sort of deciding that maybe that wasn't the best you know, course of action, and then going back to the original continuity. But again, you know, that's the beauty of comics. You can try something, try it out for a few years, see how people respond to it, and then keep what worked and ditch what didn't.
Yeah. And I think, unfortunately, the people forget that this is a business, and that the publishers are in business to make money, and they make more money selling issues than selling less issues. So while I think the longtime readers are not real crazy about the reboots, every time they do a reboot, it generally sells better than the last time. So the spreadsheet evidence says a new number one issue is a great thing. Some of the audience might not feel that way, but somebody's showing up to buy the new number ones whenever they put them out. So, you know, to me, I have to look at it like they're all just made up stories. You pick the ones that you like and you stick with those. And if you're not crazy about what's happening right now, it's apt to change in 3 or 4 years anyway, because this is all cyclical.
Sure.
All right.
Great. Thanks, Dan. If I could maybe...
Oh, sorry. Thank you very much for calling. It's 800-348-2551. More calls in a moment.
Support for WMC comes from Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Huntsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. edith-huntsberger.artistwebsites.com. Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts. Offering lawn and garden equipment, parts and service to customers throughout western Massachusetts, a family-owned business for over 50 years. boydenandperrin.com. The Whistling Kettle, featuring iced tea for summer hydration and a selection of over 150 premium teas, including specialty iced tea makers, Troy and Boston Spa, thewhistlingkettle.com. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, careersintransitionllc.com. Northeast Solar in Hatfield, Massachusetts, helping Pioneer Valley residents live more sustainably with solar power for home, business, or farm. Keep solar local, northeast-solar.com. And Bed and Bowl, Huntington, Massachusetts, a home-style bed and breakfast for dogs, offering overnight boarding on a 50-acre farm, convenient to Northampton, Springfield, and the Berkshires, bedandbowl.com.
When we're talking comics, Comic-Con, just about everything else and in between. 800-348-2551. Rick Marshall is here, as is Ron Mars, and your calls are welcome. 800-348-2551. You know, a long time ago when comic books were 12 cents and it was pretty much just DC or Marvel, heroes were heroes, villains were villains. I mean, there were some misunderstood heroes like the Hulk and Spider-Man who had a bad rap but were really decent guys. But now those lines are really blurred, aren't they? I mean, bad guys can be good guys can be bad guys. It's just not as it's a lot of gray, not as much black and white.
Well, I think, you know, I think our society is more shades of gray now. We're we're a more complex society, and the entertainment we consume always reflects that. And comics are no different. Comics, to a great extent, I think, reflect where we are as a culture, and I think they certainly kind of reflect where we're headed as well. I think comics are generally ahead of the curve. Certainly, you know, just in terms of what you go see in a movie theater. I mean, I read comics as a kid because you couldn't get those stories anywhere else. You couldn't get the sort of outer space epic that the Fantastic Four was. Or a guy swinging on a spider line between buildings, there was no way to even show that properly unless you were going to animate it. Mm-hmm. Now technology has caught up with what we've been doing in comics for 30 or 40 years, and that's the dominant entertainment form, I think, really, on the planet, is superhero movies. If you had told me when I broke into comics almost 25 years ago that we'd be getting a major superhero movie release every 3 months, and that they would be the biggest movies every weekend, you know, I would have said you were nuts. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I broke into the business, Marvel couldn't get a decent TV movie made, much less a blockbuster that opened worldwide. We've come so far. I mean, and really, Comic-Con is kind of a microcosm of it. The first Comic-Con I went to was probably '92. And the building was half the size that it is now, and the Gaslamp District in San Diego, which, you know, the Comic-Con has expanded into for blocks, was basically non-existent. It was the other side of the tracks, the railroad tracks from the convention center, were literally the other side of the tracks. You didn't go over there at night. You know, San Diego's a Navy town, and so that those streets were what you would expect to find in a Navy town at that point. And now it's this, you know, it's this high rent district. Everything is kind of caught up with comics. So now I think it's the job of comics to kind of figure out where we're headed next and have everybody follow us.
And I think it's a testament too to the movies and the way they're handling things. In that Marvel, especially with their movies, and their movies are every one of them has been a blockbuster, but they're actually staying true to some of those sort of heroes are heroes, villains are villains qualities that you talked about there. Captain America is still a Boy Scout in the movies. He doesn't have that sort of, he's not going dark in the movies still. He works.
Well, Superman has kind of a temper now, doesn't he?
Yes, yes. On the other side, with some of the DC Comics heroes, they're really experimenting right now. Warner Brothers is with, going dark with a lot of their characters. Mm-hmm. Where before Batman was the darkest thing you really got out of the DC Comics universe, now Superman and the rest are sort of going darker. But there's was a lot of backlash to the last couple of films, to Man of Steel and Batman v Superman, about them being too dark overall. And some of the footage that came out of Comic-Con, actually, of Justice League, the new big team-up movie coming out, that really put emphasis on them being sort of funnier and dare I say, more in line with some of what the Marvel movies are doing, where you kind of have these heroes that can be funny and have fun while they're also saving the world and make quips and that sort of thing. And that's interesting to me that movies have actually gone back to the very much heroes are heroes, villains are villains, where comics have been a lot grayer.
Let's talk to Christopher Middletown. Christopher, go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, sir, I'd like to address the issue of diversity in comics. As long as comics have been around, they've always had, you've had a sidekick come in for some of the superheroes, but never an actual comic where the African-American is the actual star without some tech or a mask that covers his face. If they want to address the good side of people, show us some heroes.
Wasn't the Falcon the first African-American superhero? That was back in the 60s.
The Black Panther was actually the first one who, as the caller said, had a full face mask, but was from Africa, was a prince, was a genius.
He was a king, yeah.
comics are lagging behind in terms of diversity. I think obviously we're getting better. That's not to say that we're where we need to be, but comics are much more inclusive now than even 10 years ago, I think. So it's a long process, and it's not an overnight thing. And I think we're going to start to see the movies drive more of the comic content, because we're getting a Black Panther movie, we're getting a Captain Marvel movie, we're getting finally a Wonder Woman movie that looks great. So comics have been largely white and largely male because they were directed towards largely white, largely teen, adolescent, boy audiences for decades. And then it started to dawn on people that we could tell any kind of stories with these. We don't have to just tell kids' stories. So it's been an evolving process, and I feel like we're still behind the curve, but there's now at least an awareness that there's an entire other audience out there that we're not servicing. And I think it's easier when I say we. I think most people look at it as superhero comics. Obviously, there's a whole range of comics out there that have nothing to do with superheroes, and I think are actually much more diverse and much more inclusive because they're not dealing with 50 or 60 or 70 years of history and continuity that are rooted in other eras. So it's an evolving process, and we're not where we need to be. But I do think there's finally an awareness that, hey, you know, there's an audience out there that we need to reflect. And frankly, just from a pure business point of view, there's an audience out there that will pay us. There's an audience out there that will show up if we give them stories and heroes that reflect who they are.
And I agree with you with movies sort of pushing things along. When Black Panther does come out and ends up being almost inevitably a massive success, as just going on what the other Marvel movies have done, I think you're going to see a lot of reactive change after that as well. I think you're going to start seeing, because there are the numbers that this succeeds in in Hollywood, in the biggest stage.
It's it's true in comics just like it's true in everything else. Follow the money. If there's money to be made by doing things like Black Panther and Captain Marvel and Wonder Woman, if those movies come out and are a success, you're going to get a lot more of them.
This Comic-Con in particular, I found was interesting because it really was women took sort of center stage in a lot of the biggest announcements. The Wonder Woman trailer was probably, in my estimation, the biggest hit of San Diego Comic-Con. And there's a female-led superhero movie. And on the Marvel side, the announcement that Brie Larson was going to play Captain Marvel was probably Marvel's biggest announcement. That was sort of the big climactic moment of their presentation, was announcing that Brie Larson was going to be playing Captain Marvel. So those are two of the biggest movie studios out there for superhero movies, making female characters the centerpieces of their presentation at Comic-Con.
Yeah, and truthfully, for years.
Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you very much for calling, Christopher.
Thanks. I was going to say for years, it always baffled me because when I broke into the business, the books were largely male leads, and it always kind of baffled me that aren't we kind of just ignoring 50% of the population? Mm. Can't we sell twice as many of these things if we actually include the heroes that women would be interested in?
This might be a bit off topic, but all that controversy over the reboot of Ghostbusters with women. They got a lot of nasty comments. Some of the cast members, I don't know, some guys just don't want to see women in those roles. Do you think that was it?
It goes back to the entire nostalgia is a powerful force, and it kind of perverts things over time too. And that movie in itself was such a lightning rod for so many reasons. Both the project itself that was being rebooted, the decision to go with the all female sort of leads for it, and so many other elements of what was going on there, whether or not it was the fact that it was a reboot instead of a sequel, so many things. That was really sort of a lightning rod for every controversy in the entertainment world, all heaped on one project.
Yeah, I mean, certainly if you feel like four really funny ladies doing a movie ruined your childhood, your childhood probably wasn't all that great. It reflects where we are as a society, that we're still wrestling with this stuff. Frankly, I heard the same stuff when we got rid of Hal Jordan and I made up a new Green Lantern. We got the same, you ruined my childhood. Well, no, your childhood's fine, and the books that you read as a child are still right there on the shelf. If those are the ones you want, go read them. We're doing something new for somebody else. If you don't like it, sorry, but somebody else will. We've become very possessive as consumers of pop culture.
It seems the industry years ago was happy. They had Batman. Okay, we have Batgirl. Superman. We have Supergirl. Just sort of put the same uniform on a woman, and we're all set. But that's just not the case anymore. Right?
Well, that's a Band-Aid.
Yeah.
That's a Band-Aid over the problem. And again, it was largely sales driven, because the conventional wisdom, certainly up until the 80s, was that, you were telling superhero stories to boys that were 10 to 14 years old. And at the end of that cycle, a new crop of 10 to 14 year olds came in, and you just told the same stories over and over again. That's why, to great extent, superhero stories are all middle. They have an origin, and they're all middle. There's no end.
Our next caller is Josh in Utica. Josh, go ahead.
Hey. Hi, Ron. Josh from the Utica Public Library.
Hey, Josh. How are you?
Good. I want to say hey. Thank you for coming to our convention last year.
It was great. Great library.
Yeah. Basically, I just wanted to talk about the inclusivity issue and sort of plug libraries and cons a little bit. Looking at something like San Diego Comic-Con or New York Comic-Con, there is a barrier to entry, I think, for a lot of people in terms of cost and accessibility. And there's a lot of public libraries like the Utica Library, which are holding local cons, which are fantastic and really bring pop culture to the masses, so to speak.
Well, it's certainly, again, having been doing this for almost 25 years, it used to be that there was a major con, once a month from April or May to October, somewhere in the country. And then it got to be that there was a sizable con pretty much every weekend somewhere in the country. And now there are three or four sizable cons every weekend in the country, except for basically Christmas. It's huge business. They're all over the place. And I think conventions have started to striate a little bit in that there, there are conventions. If you want to go get Ernie Hudson's autograph because you love Ghostbusters in the 80s, you can go do that. If you want to meet a wrestler, you can go do that. If you just want to deal with comics, there are conventions that just have comics.
Right.
It used to be that you couldn't go to a convention because there just weren't that many of them, and they were in major cities. Now they're everywhere, and I've done a couple of library conventions, both Utica and Saratoga, and I know Schenectady has one too, that are...
Oh, yeah, New York right now has numerous, and in the Library Association, it's a hot topic as to, not just Comic-Cons, but sort of pop culture festivals, book festivals of that nature. It's something we're actively talking about at the professional level as well.
It's I actually enjoy the smaller conventions a lot more because you get to have more one-on-one time with the audience, with the people that show up. A larger show certainly has its benefits because you're going to see a lot more. There's a lot more to do. But for a personal interaction, in a lot of ways, the smaller the show, the better.
And the one other thing I think that like Archon at a public library has going for it, that while something like a major con like San Diego Comic-Con or New York Comic-Con or even smaller cons like Albany Comic-Con are quote-unquote family-friendly events, there's a lot of not family-friendly things happening there. And we can definitely regulate it so that it is a con for ages, you know, zero and up, and having things for everyone.
Yeah, it's a to me, the development of the library cons is great because it brings that experience to people that are not going to be able to have it otherwise. And yeah, obviously, cons are a big deal. They're Comic-Con from last weekend was the biggest news in terms of entertainment anywhere in the world.
I mean, and speaking from a public library standpoint, I mean, our con in Utica, where you came to last year, Fandemicon, was 700 people in one day for the library. I mean, that's huge for us. So it's like a marriage made in heaven.
All right. Well, thank you very much for calling.
All right. Can I just give a shameless plug for ours that's in August?
Sure.
Sure. It's Fandemicon. It's on Saturday, August 20th from 10 to 5 on fandemicon.com. And Ron, thanks again. Keep up the great work promoting cons, comic books, everything.
Thanks, Josh. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for calling. More calls in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Wash and Wag Pet Grooming Salon, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Professionally trained groomers, organic, natural products, no cage drying, Facebook and 866-WASH-WAG. Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services, from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts, amherstcopy.com. Vermont Coffee Company, offering slow-roasted organic coffee in the brown paper bag at local grocery stores. Vermont Coffee Company, coffee roasted for friends. The Hyde Collection, an art museum and historic house in Glens Falls, New York, open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, and Sunday, 12 to 5, hydecollection.org. The Arthur Zankel Music Center at Skidmore College, a cultural resource for the upstate region, providing a teaching, recording, and performance venue with rental options available, skidmore.edu/ZANKEL. And George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts, family-owned and operated for over 75 years, serving Western Massachusetts with propane and full-service heating and plumbing installation, services, and deliveries. GeorgePropane.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. We go to Schenectady. And Kathy, go ahead.
I heard your comment about the Ghostbusters movie, and I have to admit, my disappointment, when I first heard about it, I was excited. I thought it sounded like a great idea. But as time went on, the fact that they really didn't give us a new story. I thought a continuation of Ghostbusters would have been great. But the fact that this was just a poor rehash of the original and from, you know, just that just really turned me off. I wanted to see a new Ghostbusters.
Well, any thoughts?
Well, I thought it actually told a pretty good story that strayed from the original in the right ways and kept sort of the spirit of the original film where it needed to as well. Kate McKinnon's character was fantastic and probably one of my favorite new action heroes on the big screen. So yeah, I think overall the film was a success in doing what it wanted to do, and now we just kind of wait and see how it does financially and that sort of thing to see whether or not we'll continue seeing more from them.
I got nothing because I haven't seen it yet. That's one of the. That's one of the pitfalls of doing this for a living is, you know, you work at home, so you're at work all the time, and you don't get a chance to go out and see stuff as you would like to, because you're chained to the desk. Although I did see Star Trek the other night.
And you create things, I react to them. That's the dynamic here.
You have to get out and see it. I can wait till it gets to the second run theater.
Thank you very much for calling, Kathy. 800-348-2551 from Woodstock. Harriet, go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to mention two things. An old favorite of mine, and I mean old, Doctor Strange. Does that ring a bell?
Oh, yeah. Big movie coming out in just a little while.
Kidding. Really?
No. Yeah, I mean, that was one of the other... It's actually a testament to how well it's being received, in that it showing another trailer. It wasn't even one of the first trailers, a second or third trailer from it. Comic-Con was a very big deal, and it's looking...
that's fabulous news. I'm thrilled to hear that. I thought he was long gone and forgotten.
Oh no, Benedict Cumberbatch, the star of Sherlock.
Oh no, really?
Is playing him, perfect. And comes out in, I believe, in November.
Perfect.
It'll be hitting theaters, perfect. And it looks fantastic so far. It's got a great star-studded cast. The casting went very well with it. All the right people, I think, in all the right places. And yeah, with a few, with a few exceptions that people are sort of bickering over, but otherwise everything seems to look good. Very very trippy, and in the spirit of the sort of best parts of the run, where things got very surreal, and during the psychedelic era of Doctor Strange seems to be very much a part infused into the movie.
Yeah, oh, that's wonderful news. And my other thing I wanted to mention, one of my favorites, and I don't think there's a comic, I don't know anything, except that I just love Hellboy. And I wondered if he has a comic. I wondered if there's going to be another Hellboy movie. There have been two. And where does Hellboy fit in the superhero kind of genre?
Hellboy's a very a long-running comic, sort of in limbo a bit right now, mainly because the authors had been writing it for so much of his career and wanted to take a break. The rumors of a sort of a third movie have been going on for a really long time now, and they wanted to make a third one. The star there, Ron Perlman, was one of the most vocal people sort of campaigning for it for a while, despite the fact that he would always complain about having to go under so much makeup to order to play the role. But thus far, it's sort of fallen out of the development cycle as things have progressed, because it is going to cost a lot to make that movie, and the second movie didn't nearly make as much as they had hoped. And Guillermo del Toro, the director there, has moved on to a lot of other projects, and his schedule is very, very busy. So as he has trouble fitting it in, and the stars of the earlier two films get a bit older and get busier themselves, it's become less and less likely we'll see it again. But keeping hope alive, because I love the first two movies myself.
Yeah, me too. Hellboy. I had no idea, actually, that there was a comic book. I'm sort of out of it now. I used to love comic books. I wouldn't even know where to buy one.
Well, you can go to your local comic shop, or like we just talked about, you can go to a library and request it there. I read actually a few of the collected editions of Hellboy, just getting them out from my library here. And you can always get them there, and the art is beautiful in it. It's one of the more beautifully done comics, which is one of the reasons why it became so popular.
Yeah, wow,
absolutely.
I had no idea.
The only thing I brought back from San Diego was the hardcover reprint of the most recent batch of Hellboy stories from Mike Mignola. That was the one thing that I had to get. So I made sure that I got it. But everything else in the room I ignored. That was the one
thing. This is all amazing news to me, and thank you so much for all that information.
Thank you very much for calling, Harriet. This is a very sad coincidence that we're doing this show when news comes from Ian Pickus, our news director, just told us that Jack Davis has died, the famed cartoonist for Mad Magazine, Time and Mad, Tales from the Crypt, EC Comics. He was 91. You guys certainly know Jack Davis.
Everybody knows Jack Davis, even if they don't know that they know Jack Davis. We all grew up on Jack Davis, whether we knew it was him or not. It's sad news, but 91's a pretty good run, and he leaves a huge footprint behind him.
One of those great men who warped my mind, along with Don Martin, Al Jaffe, Sergio Aragonés, Mort Drucker, Will Elder. I mean, those guys could draw.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And the ones that are still with us still do. I see Sergio at shows
on
a fairly regular basis. Yeah. And, he is... Sergio Aragonés is exactly what you think Sergio Aragonés would be like.
He did the marginal,
very much so.
The marginal things in Mad Magazine. Yeah. Don Martin died, I guess, about 15 years ago.
But Al Jaffe's still with us.
He still is. Yeah.
But Sergio, you can still track down everything there. But yeah, Jack Davis left, as you said, a massive footprint. And he's one of those people who, when you mention the name, not everyone is going to immediately register, but you show one piece. You can pretty much select any piece of art that he's done, and they're going to recognize it.
Great, great caricatures. 800-348-2551. Dwight, go ahead, Dwight.
Yes, I just was a little bit curious. I know that a lot of what's going on in the movies and everything is from very well-established superheroes and things like that. I'm just wondering if, even in the comic books, are there any people or characters on the horizon that are up and coming that might actually make that kind of status where they might be posed? I mean, I know there's a lot of stuff going on with anime and that, but, is there anything out there?
Well, on the larger sort of more higher profile side, I mean, Captain Marvel from Marvel there is not a character that everybody's familiar with. And there's a lot of characters from both sides that from Marvel and DC sides that are going to be coming up, they're experimenting with. We have things coming up with the Inhumans from Marvel. We have lots of different lesser-known characters. And to be honest, Iron Man wasn't the highest profile character for mainstream audiences when that movie came out, when that movie was sort of announced and started making its way up. And then there are quite a bit of non-Marvel DC projects that have been optioned over the last few years, because the success of Marvel and DC has made Hollywood now look to some of these lesser known publishers to pick up properties that they have. Anime wise, we have some of the major big projects like Ghost in the Shell coming up, which kind of has its own share of issues being discussed around it. And there's a lot of other anime and manga projects. Attack on Titan turned into a movie recently. That's sort of, I think, the next horizon for a lot of things after sort of Western comics and things like that. I think we're starting to look more towards the anime and manga world.
So many comic projects get optioned in addition to Marvel and DC stuff, a lot of creator-owned stuff. And, probably 90% of them that get optioned never actually see the light of day. But, there are things that do show up, because comics is a very fertile ground for storytelling. Comics are sort of built-in storyboards. So when you go to a pitch meeting at a studio, you can already show the executives what the thing looks like. It doesn't take a huge leap of imagination to understand what this might translate to on the big screen. And frankly, looking at a comic is easier than reading a screenplay for spec purposes. So I think that's one of the other reasons that they've been embraced, is that it's almost like shorthand for visual storytelling.
And I think a lot of the lower profile projects in the comics world are actually becoming a little bit even more attractive to studios, because when they're lesser known, they don't have to worry as much about taking some license with how the characters are depicted when they make it to the screen. If the characters aren't as well known, they're not going to have that sort of nostalgia lock to how a character is supposed to look when they cast somebody in that role.
Okay.
No, that's great. I'm glad that those comments really make sense to me. That's great. Just thanks for answering my question.
Thank you very much for calling. An email here. I'm not sure what this means. Another coded thing here. After the rumors about reshoots late in the game, how worried are you guys about Rogue One? What is Rogue One?
It's the next Star Wars movie that's coming out. It's a standalone sort of it's part of their anthology series where they're going to be doing some standalone movies set at different points in the Star Wars universe. This one is set between Episode 3, their Revenge of the Sith, and the original Star Wars there, and it follows the group of pilots who are tasked with stealing the plans for the Death Star that, in the beginning of the original Star Wars, Leia hands over to R2-D2 and becomes sort of the MacGuffin for pretty much that entire film. There was a lot of talk about reshoots going on for that a while back. I think a lot of it was overblown, mainly because reshoots happen with every single big budget movie, especially. They have the budget a lot of the time to do reshoots, to sort of tweak things, to bring people back and shape things after they do some test screenings. But because of how high-profile Star Wars is as a property, people went nuts about the idea that there were reshoots, that they had to redo some things. I think that the movie that existed prior to the reshoots probably isn't going to be that much different tonally from the movie that we get after all these reshoots were done.
800-348-2551. John in Shaftesbury, Vermont. John?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to know, Ron Mars wrote a story for Green Lantern back in the day that really became a focal point for women paying attention to comic books and calling for an end to misogyny in comic books. And I'm just wondering, kind of 20 years on, what he thinks of that story, kind of looking back at it.
I wrote the story. I don't shy away from the story. A villainous character did something really villainous and really evil. I guess we should sort of discuss what happened when the new Green Lantern that I created, Kyle Rayner, first got his Green Lantern ring. His girlfriend at the time ended up paying the price because he was careless and didn't understand the seriousness of the burden that he was taking on. And she wound up murdered by a supervillain and stuffed in the refrigerator when he got home. The notion for having her stuffed in the refrigerator, I actually gladly admit to cribbing from Stephen King from his Firestarter novel when I believe it was the mother of the little girl character in the novel was stuffed in a washing machine by government agents who were trying to get their hands on the kid. So it became a tender point for people to point out that female characters often suffered consequences that the male characters didn't. And I think there's certainly truth to that. When you have an industry that at that point, and to a certain extent now, is largely driven by male heroes who are not going to be killed, who are not going to go away, the people around them are the ones that suffer the consequences. I don't shy away from the story, and I would probably write the same story now as I did then. But it certainly, it certainly brings up a great deal of discussion for, how we portray the violence of the people around the main heroes as opposed to the heroic deeds of the guys who are the title characters.
Back in the 50s, under pressure from Congress, the industry adopted the Comics Code. Is that still around? Are there things you can't do in a comic book?
No, that's actually the Comics Code was dismantled in the 90s. Although ironically, when we submitted that storyline, mm-hmm. When we submitted the issue of Green Lantern to the Comics Code, the girlfriend's body was like stuffed into the refrigerator upside down as a knife twist from the villain to make it hurt that much worse. So and in the original art, the door of the refrigerator was open. We submitted to the Comics Code, and the Comics Code flipped out and said, "You can't show that in a comic." So they made the artist redraw the panel and show the refrigerator door mostly closed, so that now that the refrigerator door is mostly closed, you can't figure out why her head is down here and her legs are up here. So everybody immediately assumed that she had been cut up and thrown in there in pieces. So the Comics Code made the whole thing that much worse by censoring us.
We are just about out of time, unfortunately. This has been a great show, and we're going to leave a few people on the line, Mike and Bill. Bill wanted to talk about the Metal Men. Oh, I love the Metal Men. I wish we could have taken that call. Maybe next time you guys and Ray Graff can talk about the Metal Men. But we'd like to thank our guests, Ron Mars, Rick Marshall. Thank you for coming in. And remember, the conversation continues online at wamc.org/VoxPop. VoxPop, you can download the new podcast on pulp culture, Retconned on iTunes or your podcast app of your choice. Zach Malloy's the engineer. Your call's answered by Bruce Herbach, our producer, Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Brian Shields. Stay tuned now for news updates. Support for WAMC comes from Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig. You can't miss it. A worker-owned and operated service, repairing foreign cars since 1972. PelhamAuto.com. TJ's Taylor Rental and Party Plus. Owners Jim and Tamara Falcone providing tool and equipment rentals, tents, bounce houses, water slides, and party supplies for events, tjstelerental.com. Shannon Rose Design, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to help companies and organizations express their identities through corporate branding. Web design and development and graphic design for almost three decades, shannonrose.com, and Preservation League of New York State offering EPIP, a revolving loan program to acquire, stabilize, and restore historic buildings in New York so our past has a future. Again, thanks for joining us. Stay tuned now for a news update.